offset.
Okay. All right.
Hello.
Hi there.
Are you candy?
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Perfect timing.
Hey,
how are you?
She's one of our Yink students. Yes,
yeah.
New one.
Well, I remember. Yeah.
Welcome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Welcome.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order at 6 o'clock. And it's not on the agenda, but I normally do roll call. So as far as the board members that are here, we have, I'm going to go back to my original sheet here. That's the right name in one spot. So we have Supervisor Franco is present.
Yes. Here.
Supervisor O'Day.
Yes.
Is present. Supervisor Gashke.
Here.
Supervisor Bashaw.
Here.
And it looks like we're missing Supervisor Kubicki and Supervisor Berg. I did get an email from Supervisor Berg that he had a work conflict. I don't know if anybody else has talked to or received any communication from Supervisor Kubicki at all. Okay. I haven't heard anything either. And then, obviously, I'm chair, so Supervisor Carroll is present for the record. So, next on the agenda is the, I believe, the certification of the meeting compliance.
Sure. Yes. There's also Rebecca. I don't know where other, she's the other student. I didn't get an email from her, so but she's probably not here. So just a record.
Okay. Right. And
Kenzie Hagen. Kuhagen is her last name. So there's two of them. Her and Rebecca.
Cecil. I'm not sure how to say that.
Yeah, I don't know her last name.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, just for the record.
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that up. So, okay.
We do track attendance for Yick.
Right, yeah.
Which school?
Harborside.
It's a little drive.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so the certification of compliance with Wisconsin Open Meetings Law. Terry, is that normally something you just confirm?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
We've got it. We're good.
Okay. All right. And then, feature program, Mental Health First Aid, redefined across Wisconsin.
Yes, all right. Good evening, everyone. I'm Mary Metten. I'm the health and well-being educator with UW-Madison Division of Extension here at the Kenosha County Office. So I'll be talking tonight about mental health first aid as a training curriculum, as well as how we have been able to utilize it in 2021 and 2022 across Wisconsin, and then also how that has brought a lot of great value into Kenosha County. So as we get things going, by show of hands, has anyone in here ever taken a first aid training or course in their... Yeah, so it's the majority of us. So this training, Mental Health First Aid, is similar as a medical first aid course in that it trains people to be able to provide assistance and support until professionals can be sought. So when you leave a first aid course, you're not stitching anyone up or setting a broken bone or performing surgery. With mental health first aid, it's similar. We're not teaching people to diagnose or to treat, put any labels on anyone or do anything that a support group would do. So that's something that is discussed and reiterated throughout the training. It's really to help people notice and see symptoms as they are, be able to provide support, refer, give information, things of that nature. So I'm going to start with a quick video that actually opens up one of the trainings, which is the adults helping adults. And this really helps to frame out a lot of the purpose behind it.
Can everyone see. Are you good?
I'm Danny. I've lived with depression and anxiety for about 12 years. And today I'm going to be opening up about those mental health challenges with some complete strangers in the hopes that we can start normalizing conversations about mental health. Hi, I'm Danny. Nice to meet you.
I'm Colleen. It's nice to meet you too.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
I'm doing really good.
Yeah.
Doing good. Yourself?
I'm actually not doing so well today.
Okay. That's honest.
Is that right? Okay, what's going on?
Can you tell me a little bit more about it? Do you feel comfortable talking about it, or?
Yeah, I can talk about it. So I've been living with depression for a long time, and this week has been particularly hard for me. So a lot of people simply just don't know what to say and what to do when somebody opens up to them about a mental health or addiction challenge. And that's really where mental health first aid can be valuable. It teaches people a concrete action plan for starting a conversation and getting somebody the support that they need, whether that's treatment or just a non-judgmental listening ear. So was it a little unexpected when I responded that I wasn't doing well, us being complete strangers until this moment?
I'll be honest, it caught me off guard.
Yeah.
You just expect the automatic response of, you know, how are you doing? I'm good.
When you first meet someone, here there's like a huge distance.
I always feel like, how can I help someone else? So, and I know it's hard because you just want to be like, oh, sorry, okay, let me run.
And I don't think people do it because they're inconsiderate. I think it's because they honestly just don't know what to say.
Have you talked to anyone about this?
Sometimes I just don't want to burden.
Yeah.
I know it feels like that, but most of the time people want to help.
Yeah.
Like everyone kind of wants to be useful to other people, so they want to help you. So
yeah.
Don't feel like you're burdening them.
That was really
I like totally wanted to give you a hug, and I was like, that's not weird, but okay.
No, that was like exactly like what you should have said.
Myself, I was thinking like, okay, this person is in need of help. Try your best. Listen to them. Sometimes that's the best thing you can do is just listen.
Yeah, if you had cancer, you wouldn't just try to fix your, you wouldn't will yourself to get better with that. And so I think that, I hope that people just start talking about it more.
Wouldn't it be refreshing if we could take off the mask?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Be real people.
So how did you learn how to respond that way?
My father committed suicide when I was young, and it was like a really pivotal change. And I think I spent most of my life trying to avoid that and avoid talking about that and like the shame and the guilt. So I really made this decision to like learn how to interact with people and be empathetic and show people that someone does care about me if I don't know you. I think people should just ask more questions, because it's like once you get to know the person and understand that it could literally be any of us, like any of us could have this at any point in our lives, it just, how could you make a judgment on it?
Can I give you a hug?
Well, absolutely.
Thank you.
So, within that intro video, any questions or reactions right away? It's okay if there's not also. So, to set the stage a little bit of why this is such an important topic and training and something that within the Division of Extension, it really has been used statewide, is thinking about mental health within the United States. So statistically, 1 in 5 teens and adults live with a mental health condition, and 50% of mental illnesses develop by the age of 14 and 75% by the age of 24. And there is an average of about 10 years between onset of symptoms and treatment being sought. So within the trainings, whoops, that went too far ahead. Within the trainings, it is really helpful because it is teaching everyone. So like a first aid class in general, any adult in the community can come to these. You don't have to have any specialized training or education or experience. It really is designed for people living amongst us to be able to provide initial help, respond, notice signs and symptoms, and be able to really assist someone with developing mental health or substance use challenges, to be able to be that bridge and or help them to be able to seek that appropriate help. So the training itself is evidence-based. It actually originated from Australia over 20 years ago. Then in 2008, the Adult Mental Health First Aid, which is Adults Assisting Adults, was adapted to the United States and brought over here. And then in 2012, the Youth Mental Health First Aid, which is Adults Assisting Youth, was adapted and brought over to the United States. In 2020, both curriculums went through revisions, so the second version has rolled out since then. Obviously, in 2020, COVID also happened. So they quickly took a look to be able to transform both of the trainings to virtual platforms too, just because they are between the adult and the youth trainings. They're respectively 7.5 and 6.5 hours. And if any of you have taken Zoom trainings or meetings in the last couple of years, that's a really long time. So just being able to adapt it so that it is more useful in a virtual platform, as well as kind of figuring out how to keep people as engaged as possible, was something that they had to take a look at. The second versions also have in-person, and that is something that I'll be talking about that we're now starting to be able to offer again, which is really nice just because the face-to-face is just a lot more conducive for people's learning in a lot of ways.
So Mary, what would like a typical attendee, who would that be?
Really anyone. It's been a lot of people that work in people serving positions, but most of the people, I would say almost all of the people, also come talking about a duality of roles. So in a lot of the mental health first aid trainings, if it's with a school district or, you know, a child serving organization, a lot of times they're there for work. But usually they're also saying, I'm a parent, I volunteer, I'm a coach, I have nieces and nephews, I'm a grandparent, et cetera, et cetera. So it's that reminder to not only apply it for if you were coming for professional purpose, if that's what brought you here, that's great, but also keep in mind that there are so many other places that you probably interact with youth, and then with the adults assisting adults, that can be colleagues, neighbors, friends, family, fellow church members. I mean, really, the list could be endless when you're thinking about all of the different people and ways that you interface with folks in the community. So it really is something that ideally is structured for anyone to be able to take away a lot of great information. It's based on this first aid action plan, which they use the term ALGI, which has all these different steps. So throughout the course of the day, it's teaching everyone about the different steps and how to apply them in situations where people are showing early signs and symptoms of mental illness, emerging signs and symptoms, or worsening signs and symptoms, as well as crisis situations. So something that is helpful with this is they use ALGI as a mnemonic device to help people remember the steps and for it to make sense, but it is stressed that it's nonlinear. So the only thing that you're doing all the time is that assessment for suicide or other risk of harm. So that is kind of the first and always. Beyond that, it's really helping people understand and get comfortable with knowing they're probably not going to apply all the steps all of the time. They really need to gauge the situation and the person and the relationship and all of the other factors going on, of which steps are going to be the most appropriate. So that is something that is really the base of the training, and then a lot of the other information about specific mental illnesses or interactions or ways to be able to provide these different steps in different types of scenarios come along after. So then within extension, so WROS, it stands for Wisconsin Rural Opioid and Stimulant Engagement. So that is a project that's under UW-Madison Division of Extension's Health and Wellbeing Institute, which is the primary institute that I work under with my role at Extension. So this was something that came through a grant that was awarded to the Division of Extension from SAMHSA, or the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. So a big part of the awarded grant was rolling out the adult mental health first aid and the youth mental health first aid trainings across the state. So there definitely was an emphasis on rural communities, but I think outside of Milwaukee, every county has rural sectors of the community. So it was something that we were all able to tap into within our kind of small team within Extension statewide. So I am trained for adult and youth mental health first aid. We were able to prop up all of these different virtual trainings across Wisconsin in 2021 and thus far in 2022, and all of the costs were absorbed through the grant, which was really great, so that it was accessible not only because it was virtual, but because there was no barrier of entry cost-wise. So there were 34 adult trainings and 31 youth trainings that were offered to the folks in Kenosha County, which ended up being a really great benefit, because when you hold a training, the person has to be available on that specific date and to be able to get to that location, et cetera, et cetera. But for this, it resulted in 28 county residents being able to tap into 20 of the different dates that were offered within this year and a half. And it was just a great way not only to offer it within the county, but within the trainings, it was really cool to see people have that light networking with other people throughout the state. And be able to talk about resources that are available, that aren't available, what things look like in their area of Wisconsin, different agencies that may be represented, and just a lot of good conversation from that mixture of people, not just in our direct area. So that was kind of an added benefit. Yep.
So are these trainings for the trainer, or the trainer training
us people? Trainers training the community.
Okay.
Yep.
So you said out of 34 to 31 trainings, so that's 65, only 28 attended, or?
It was 28 people from the county, from Kenosha County, that attended those trainings that were offered.
So those trainings were statewide?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
And they were free and statewide, so quarterly we would have the new training dates, and then we would be able to send them out within the local community to say, here are new training dates, and they always filled up, so it wasn't trying to figure out like a local minimum for it to be executed. It was just something that basically we knew would fill. So it was a really good way to be able to get more people, more dates and opportunities to plug it into their schedule as it fit.
Okay.
Were they, some of the people that were trained, were they in contract people for the county at all?
Yes.
Okay, like give me an example of what agency it was.
Sure. Department of Workforce Development, Child Support, Health Department, Professional Services.
Across the spectrum then?
Yeah, yes, yep.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mary, I was curious because I don't think I know this or if I've heard it, if you can remind me, are there like continuing ed credits available for professionals who need to keep current?
Yes.
In their fields?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
And this is free to them also?
Yes, it
so
is.
So normally that's a cost for continuing ed, but we can provide it because of this grant to the state. We were able to provide that at no cost, and then they get credits they need anyway through the registry.
Well,
or
through, it depends on their licensure or certification.
Okay.
But through the state, yes.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Good.
Right. So something in addition that was a recent just neat thing is that the Division of Extension was recognized with the Redefined Award at the national conference that Mental Health First Aid hosts. So this happened in either April or May. I didn't go. My colleague Tracy went to accept the award. But within the Community Impacts Award, it was recognized how Division of Extension took the opportunity with virtual trainings to be able to reach a broader spectrum of people throughout the state, as well as the grant funding to be able to provide it at no cost, because otherwise the virtual trainings were looking at $25 a seat. And so within that and the way we were able to network together, that was something that was awarded to Extension. So that was just something exciting. A couple other things coming up, as I said, we're able to start integrating more of the in-person trainings, which is helpful for people that don't have access, don't enjoy virtual trainings, et cetera, et cetera. So as I talked about last month, I am co-facilitating an adult mental health first aid training next week, Tuesday, here at the County Center. And it is almost full. So we still have 4 spots if any of you are interested in coming. It is all day on Tuesday. But this, we're also able to tap into that grant funding, so it is no cost for all of the participants. So at this point, we do have 21 people registered, and then if I fill the 4 other spots that I have manuals for, great. If not, it certainly is a good enough size class to be able to still have a great training day. Another thing coming up at the beginning of, if anyone wants, I passed these out last time, but if anyone wants them, I'll just leave them up here. And then at the beginning of July, I'm going to be co-facilitating with a group of employees from Roundy's in Kenosha. So that, again, will be in person, and it's something that the employer is seeking out for their staff. So it's things of this nature. You know, this, we cast the net broadly just for any adults in the community for the one next week. And then within the Roundy's training, I mean, that's specifically for their employees. But being able to work with different groups is great. Just to have more information and all of that out there is never a bad thing. Okay, so the next portion that I'm going to run through is a truncated version of a segment of the training. So it will be talking about crisis situation involving suicide. So something within the training that I always tell people before we go into a lot of the different topics is any of the subject matters and activities that we do, we say it's challenged by choice in the way of knowing a lot of the topics that we talk about involving mental health conditions and substance use challenges can be tough for people, especially if they have had lived experience or they have loved ones or just people that they know that have dealt with this. So similarly for you, I want everyone to be able to experience just a little segment of the training, but I also want to say that it is absolutely challenged by choice. So in anything that we're going through, if you'd rather sit it out, take a bathroom break, or just kind of sit back and observe, that's totally understandable. No questions asked, no judgment at all. As we're going through this too, even though I'll be kind of facilitating it mostly as it would be with a group in the training, if you have questions, certainly feel free to stop me. All right, so the first thing that we're going to do is we are going to be talking about suicide specifically. So within the youth and the adult trainings, it is presented pretty similarly, which is why I thought this would be a good segment just to help people get kind of a sense of what it is. As we are going through this, you're getting a shortened version of it, so I may not say it as much, but in the full version of the training, I let people know that within the training and just any written communication that I would send out or anything like that, people may notice that I use the term died by suicide as opposed to committed suicide or successful suicide. Does anyone have familiarity with that or thoughts of why I would use the term died by suicide as opposed to the more commonly known committed suicide or successful suicide? Yeah.
Well, again, it kind of removes the judgment. It's a more neutral term.
Yes.
If somebody died from a heart attack or died from cancer or,
yes,
you know, something along those lines, it's a health condition, a mental health condition.
So, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So this is something that within mental health communities, as well as I've noticed it specifically in some journalism and other ways that it has been reported, there has been a shift more to the term died by suicide just because of things exactly like that. So when you're thinking of other causes that people die from, you know, yeah, died from heart disease, died from cancer, things of that nature, as well as other meanings behind the word committed or successful. So this isn't to shame anyone that, you know, slips up, because I'm sure we've all grown up with committed suicide being very much the normal of what people say. Even in the video, the woman said when she was young, her dad committed suicide. So it isn't to say, like, you're going to get a smack on the hand and you did this wrong or anything, but it's just inviting everyone to challenge themselves a little bit and to tweak the language as it is something that comes to you. And also, you know, you don't need to beat yourself up or think you did anything wrong if it still slips out as committed suicide, just because it is so out there. But just kind of a little knowledge and information about that can be helpful sometimes. All right. So we are going to do a little activity with this myth or fact, which my signs say fact or fiction because I already had these nice laminated signs from the first version of the training, and I felt like fiction and myth, we still know what that means. So if everyone who would like to participate could stand up, what I'm going to do is read statements. And if you believe the statement that I read is factual, go toward this end of the room. If you think it is a myth or fiction, go toward this end of the room. If you're not sure or you think it could be somewhere in the middle, feel free to hover in the middle of the room. Any questions about what we're doing? Okay. So the first one, asking a person about suicide will encourage the person to attempt suicide. Do we think that is fact or fiction? All right, good job, everyone. So yes, the opposite is actually true. Asking someone directly about suicidal feelings often lowers anxiety levels and can even act as a deterrent. So the openness and concern about asking and talking about suicide can allow the person to really express and confide and share information that they may not have otherwise gone into. All right, second, suicide is the second leading cause of death for adolescents and young adults. Do we think that is fact or fiction? Suicide is the second leading cause. Be careful of the cord.
I'm not sure. I kind of want to go with the group, but I don't want to give in to peer pressure.
Looks like you're stuck in the middle.
Yeah, I know. Dive in the mind.
So it is actually fact. So according to the CDC, suicide is the second leading cause of death for people ages 10 to 14, 15 to 24, and 25 to 34. So that is actually up. Previously it was third, and now it's second.
And was the number one accident?
Yes. A youth who attempts suicide will always be suicidal. Fact or fiction?
Nope.
Good indicator.
All right, that is a myth or fiction. So most people who are at risk feel suicidal only for a brief period of time. With proper assistance and support, they can oftentimes not feel suicidal in the future. All right, next. Youth suicide occurs in all socioeconomic groups.
You can play.
There's no.
Totally up to you.
All right, we have a consensus. That is a fact. Yes, suicide occurs in all socioeconomic groups. There are variants as far as within different socioeconomic groups, but it definitely does occur in all. Two more. Family members and caregivers play a critical role in supporting a youth with suicidal thoughts. Fact or fiction?
It's moving here.
This, yeah. We're changing things.
Okay.
So it is a fact. So the role of family really can't be overstated. And family, a lot of times, is different on how people define family. So when we say family, we don't necessarily just mean kind of the typical, you know, core family. This can be caregivers, other defined family, things of that nature. But just knowing that notifying parents, caregivers, other family members is a really huge part in suicide prevention, especially with children and youth, and communicating concerns in a situation, you know, from us as a first aider is really important in kind of that calm manner of being able to describe what you've noticed and what you've seen. Last one, suicide happens without warning. Fact or fiction?
Fiction. I think it's pretty well.
Okay, so this is a myth, and usually this sparks a bit of a debate, just because it's not an absolute. But people that are suicidal generally do give hints or clues or things that a lot of times don't become apparent until people are potentially like looking back and then start to piece things together. So within this and the training at large, that's why it's that much more important as we talk about different signs and things to be aware of, different clues, and when we talk about the noticing skills. Something that I say a lot is it's not jumping to conclusions, it's asking more questions, being able to describe what you've seen, what you've heard, what you've noticed, and reflecting that back to the person. So from here in the training, we would segue into talking more specifically about different signs of potential suicide risk and what that can look like in a lot of different ways. But for the purpose of time here, I won't go into the full thing. If you want to know more, you can certainly come to the training. But thank you, everyone. So you can take a seat. All right, so then just as I'm wrapping this up, does anyone have questions or anything else that would be helpful to know, other information that you would like, if there are groups that you know of in the community that would be interested or could benefit, I'm certainly happy to chat with them more. Yeah.
So along the lines of groups, what would be your kind of minimum to make it like worth your while?
It has to be at least 5,
okay.
And it can't be more than 30.
Okay.
So anywhere in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
From your experience with people who are suicidal, do they admit that? Do they, you know, does that come out easily, or do they?
A lot of times, yes. So something that we're not going to do fully in here, but another step within the training is going through this risk assessment where we talk about the importance of directly asking, are you thinking about killing yourself and or are you thinking about suicide? As opposed to, do you want to hurt yourself? Are you thinking about harming yourself? Just the directness of that is really important. And a lot of times people will be very honest about it. It's just more the reluctance comes with bracing yourself for, okay, what do I do with that if they say yes? Is more of the scary part for like the person asking.
Or what do you do if they say I want to hurt someone else?
Yes. Yeah. And it's also
suicidal. It could be
right.
Homicidal tendencies.
Yes, and that is part of not the suicide risk assessment, but kind of that assessment in general that we talk about throughout the day, is not only risk to themselves, but risk to you. So we talk about how your own safety is important. So if there are situations that are getting heightened that you don't feel safe in, that's okay also. And then also risk to anyone else in the vicinity.
So if someone isn't comfortable coming to a course, but maybe wants to know more about this, is it all online somewhere too, where you can search like what to do if you suspect?
The general information would be, just because it is an evidence-based training, the course itself, they don't release just the slides or, oh, I forgot to even pass these around. The people that attend the trainings do get access to these manuals as well as the participant processing guide, which takes you through the day. So that is something that's specifically branded to the training. But a lot of this information is out there in bits and pieces. It's just always making sure that I would remind people to make sure that they're utilizing reputable sources.
You said 28 people from within the county, some are employees, as Supervisor O'Day touched on a little bit. Is there a plan or a strategy to work within the team leaders or department leads to do something execution-wise within the county to take advantage of?
That is definitely a hope, especially now that we're able to do more of the in-person. Currently, within the statewide team, we are training the Department of Workforce Development statewide. So in the couple that I have helped to co-teach, I have already seen people from like the Kenosha County DWD office come through the statewide effort. The department, or the Dr. Jen Freiheit of the health department in Kenosha County, she's actually coming to this coming Tuesday's training. So that'll be a good opportunity for her to see kind of what it is all about, since a lot of the in-person opportunities have been grounded.
Okay. Thank you.
So is 28, that number came up, but that's not the entire extent then to all the learners?
No. Those were just people that came out of Kenosha County specifically that engaged in those trainings.
From the virtual trainings over the past year and a half?
Yes. Yes.
So my question is, okay, we have a training scheduled for Tuesday the 21st. What about beyond that? What's the plan? And I think maybe that talks to Supervisor Bashaw's question. Moving forward, because not only through the extension, but through other committees, there's obviously an issue in the community with mental health.
Yes.
If everybody in the whole community went through this training, then they would be able to identify it and help, you know, we'd educate the community a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So what's, you know, outreach plan moving forward? How does the community get access to this and stuff like that? So
the no-cost trainings that we have been doing, unfortunately, the grant is almost over. Extension has written another grant proposal that hasn't been decided upon yet to hopefully be able to sustain the way that we've been doing it. Beyond that, it would be figuring out more structure around charging participants or entities that would want to send their staff through. So this is something too, previous to COVID, that I had engaged with like KUSD to train staff, as well as Wheatland Center School, I'm pretty sure. But within COVID, virtual learning, and then kind of priorities in schools, it's been tricky post-COVID, but definitely wanting to reach out and be able to get communication going with more districts too.
But the other thing is that, you know, because of COVID, it's, you know, highlighted.
Yes.
It.
Yeah.
Caused an increase.
Right.
So it's,
yes.
Just a quick question.
Should be high. On the grants you talk about, are they federal or are they state?
Federal.
So the university have grant writers that are, you know, really, really drilled down to those grants?
Yes.
A lot of times you keep getting the grants if you produce some good results.
Right.
And we should talk sometimes to our representatives and senators to say, mm-hmm. you know, this is a good thing.
Yes.
Well, and perhaps your national award will help that.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. So the other thing is local trainers have kind of ebbed and flowed as the years have gone. Previously, Kenosha County's Aging and Disability, the ADRC, had a grant where they had adult mental health first aid trainers trained. That grant ended. So I am co-facilitating next week with the woman that was heading up that grant, but she told me, to her knowledge, a lot of those trainers haven't continued with it. And then additionally, other local youth trainers that I knew of were hooked into KUSD, so it was working around to, you know, they were all additionally like school social workers or school counselors. So the virtual format was helpful because it was all extension employees that could co-facilitate. But when we're looking at the local in-person, not everyone that I've been able to co-train with has a job that's specifically doing education in the sense that extension does.
Few questions.
Sure.
It goes to the mental health crisis in the county, et cetera, and how might we address some of it? And this is a vehicle to certainly prepare our team members to be more aware. So you said, kind of threw it out, $25 per seat. Is that for in-person, and is that a go-forward pricing or just what you used in the grants?
That's the virtual cost.
That's virtual.
For the seat. So that is something that the National Council sets.
What is it for a face-to-face?
The face-to-face, so the big manual is what I purchased. Everyone has to have one of those. Those are $18.95 each. The participant processing guide, those are $10 each. But we have the ability to do some in-house printing to help not have to have an additional $10 each, just to make sure that people are getting the needed paperwork out of that, essentially.
For trainer facility, facilities are ours, but trainer costs.
So it's through my job, so no additional for that.
So $30 per head.
Ish, yeah. So, and for Tuesday, we just decided lunch on your own so that we didn't have to wait into all of that.
Can it be delivered in modules, or does it have to be a full day training?
It can be two.
If I take people out of the workforce for a day, that's...
Right, it can be two half days or a full day. And this is something, too, I mean, if there are groups that would like to have it even on a Saturday, it would take just a little more finagling between myself and finding a co-facilitator that would be available, and if then they would charge for their time. Mm-hmm. So it can vary a little bit, but if it is something that an employer supports, that's great, just because... Hopefully, people would be able to do that.
Yeah, 100 people is $3,000. It's really nothing in the overall scheme of things. Method, would you do a hybrid or do it, you prefer the face-to-face?
There is a blended course where people do 2 hours of pre-training online, and then it can either be the additional chunk would be in-person live or via Zoom live. And that really just depends on people's comfort with tech.
And at the end of the training, what are they prepared for? To have that algae conversation or to make recommendations? How prepared are they?
I mean, it really depends on the person. So part of it, too, is there's an exit ticket where we get a gauge from people if they have any immediate needs, if they have any lingering questions, things of that nature. But the training in itself prepares them to assess for safety or harm, help them be able to encourage people to seek professional help, seek self-help or other support strategies, and then it goes more into kind of the soft touch approaches of how they approach people, listening non-judgmentally, and being able to give reassurance and information as opposed to just giving advice of, here, you should do this.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
This is serious to me. I had to identify my neighbor who hung himself.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, absolutely. This is something where it's rare that people haven't had it touch their life in some level.
in different proximities, but it absolutely.
Yeah, my wife's cousin, a little over a year ago, it was top of the class at, what's the big medical place in Minnesota?
Johns Hopkins.
No, Mayo Clinic. So he was top of his class and Mayo, like, far exceeded everybody in his class and just had anxiety and got freaked out one night.
So it's very far reaching.
What's his name?
Brandon. Brandon Gislin.
I know who he is. Because when you said that, I immediately thought that sounded like Brandon.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
So
I definitely appreciate everyone's feedback. If you have other ideas or people that would be helpful to reach with this information within all parts of the community, so in the city, out in the county, all of it, I think it's useful to everyone.
The one that's happening on Tuesday, is that specifically like youth, like adults to youth, or is it adult to adult?
Adult to adult.
Oh, yep. Just curious.
And are we doing now with 4-H? It seems like this is an added but not a required unless they're going to camp.
Supporting youth mental health is another thing I'm engaged. Yeah, it's different. It's a little different.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And I'll just say I took this in, what year did I take this? Before COVID, in my previous role. And it was very interactive, very engaging. Like, they had us up doing activities, which is very extension-y. We don't like to talk at people. We like to pull people in. And, wow.
Yeah, that's so fun. This will be my first in-person one since the end of February 2020 at Aurora Hospital. So it looks a little bit different. But, yeah, it is. It'll be nice to be able to do this in person with people again.
Mary, how many people do you think all told you've trained?
I have no idea, to tell you the truth. You've
been on this for a few years.
Yeah, I did a bunch in person, locally, and then I've done probably 2 a quarter with the virtual team. You know, we all spread it out, so it's not the same people doing it all the time. But, I mean, they always fill up registration-wise, so it's been a lot. I really like it, though. I mean, it is a time commitment, more so than a typical first aid class, but there's a lot more involved with it.
A lot to unpack.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. All right. Hard act to follow there.
Yeah. Sorry. It took more time than I was thinking, too.
Well.
We had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I wish we had more time because it's that important of an issue, I feel.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I'm really thinking about how to, you know, what are the next steps? When's the next class? How do we get more people involved? You know, how do we, you know, be part of the solution?
Absolutely.
For what's going on. So thanks for your expertise in that. Youth and governance. Help me.
Okay.
What
you
bet. Talk about with youth and governance.
I'm going to put on my Erica Ness hat this evening because Erica, I think, is still in Spain. She was traveling with her family, and so we want to welcome new youth and governance, Kenzie. And I meant to sort of initiate a little icebreaker, but you mentioned you're from which school?
Harborside.
Harborside. Okay, excellent. Welcome. Yeah. So if you have any questions, as always, reach out to anyone here, and looks like Rebecca is not with us tonight. And then the only other update that I have is I will encourage all of you to join Erica and others for the bus tour, the Youth and Governance bus tour, and that is on June 29th. Erica, I'm going to have her forward information, the flyer and such. We were kind of digging for some old. I said, we don't want to send out old information. She's done a lot of planning work for this. I just didn't have it handy right before the meeting. So
generally starts at 8, ends at 4.
Yeah, and I think it seems like I read they're meeting at KCC. I won't be at this particular one, but
What does it do? They just go through? county building to county building and all over the county.
And some do they do corrections here? I'm doing Racine's too, and they're kind of similar. So.
They go to the public safety building.
Okay.
When I went on the tour, the power went out when we were down there, so we couldn't go through the building.
Right.
So I didn't get the full effect, but right. we were there to meet with them, and then they had us leave.
And okay. you get a view of some of the cells and things.
Right. Yeah, we see the jail and the Racine one. I have not yet been to Kenosha, but it's on my list, so... Okay, that's all I have for youth and governance.
Okay. UW Extension Educator Program update. So, Paul's still in whose court here?
Let's start with Amy. Okay. You're right.
Well, pleasure to meet all of you in person. Yes. I've seen some of you at the new County Board Supervisor Training, mm-hmm. and I've been with Extension now 11 years. I worked in Kenosha County now since 2013. So I've been around the block. I've seen some of our more senior established supervisors for many years here, and it's been just an amazing career with Extension. So I do community development education, which involves leadership development programs. It involves economic development, strategic planning, runs the gamut as things kind of come to me. So as opposed to like a 4-H, where it's somewhat cyclical, my work is very different year by year. It just really depends what kind of comes to me. But I am a faculty member with UW-Madison, so there's a more of a research component to the things I have to do, whereas maybe Mary can, you know, present an approved curriculum. I would be making my own curriculum, essentially, to teach, which is actually what I've been doing as of late. So I trained last week 40 supervisors from the Department of Corrections in a curriculum over 8 hours called Courageous Connections Through Relational Networking. So this is a relationship building curriculum, ultimately teaching competencies that you can use when you're in difficult relationships. So how do we work when, you know, everyone says, oh, I'm good at relationships. I'm already good.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife and I are really tight. Happy about that. Thank you. And how do we work with people that maybe don't like us or we don't like them, or it's been a long history of very complicated interactions. So we teach the building blocks, so to speak, of what do we know from research that builds trust-based relationships. So those skills are reflexivity, co-learning, co-responsibility, trust and honesty, and trust and honesty. So there's five. And basically just break it down through exercises, and people realize that, wow, there's a lot going on that we could take notice of if we make it a practice. So anywho, that was last week. Really excited to have offered the full day with the Department of Corrections. This is the supervisors of all the probation and parole officers in Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth counties. And there's a lot going on in corrections, unfortunately, and relationships are very, very important. I also have a nonprofit peer learning series that we're going to be piloting, this is established at this point, but I'm enrolling nonprofit executive directors and also board of directors members that would like to learn more about scenario planning and action planning. So very concrete skills that are useful when managing staff, when managing an organization, particularly when an organization is going through a lot of change, and certainly the pandemic has created a whole lot of flux for a lot of organizations. So this is a networking program. It's over 5 weeks, and then people, certainly can get to know one another, and it's all about peer learning. I'm also building a research paper that I'll be submitting to an academic journal around food banks and food pantries. So we have a food bank in Kenosha County called the Kenosha County Food Bank. I was very involved for many years, and I'm looking as a research project at all the partners that collaborate or don't with food banks and what that looks like. Interorganizational collaboration is sort of what I'm scrutinizing. why is it so challenging for organizations to often work together, and what are the benefits and costs when you know, they do need to collaborate, because more and more grantors are expecting that from people. Finally, there's also a study going on that has just kicked off with funded by the Medical College of Wisconsin, specifically looking at how do we get more Wisconsin-based food products into food banks and food pantries in Wisconsin. So, of course, our supply chains are extremely long and very sophisticated, and often our own Wisconsin producers can't get their products to local audiences. So we're doing a feasibility study to see how we can essentially accomplish that, to get more of our own products to our own audiences here in Wisconsin.
Thank you, Amy.
Go ahead, Alyssa.
Okay, I'm going to try to talk fast, because I know we've got to switch over.
It's all right, take your time. We've got a very short meeting, so.
Okay. So my first update is that we, as in we, the state, Wisconsin 4-H, have started a new initiative called Expanding Access with Chris Clover. So essentially, this is designed to create a feeling of inclusivity, since belonging is one of the four essential elements that we encourage members of the 4-H to embody. The other three are independence, mastery, and generosity. So this one's for inclusivity. So these were distributed kind of around the county at high foot traffic areas, community centers, partners, and businesses. And the neat thing about these is that they are magnets, they're paperless, so environmentally friendly. And in our technologically savvy age, we have a little QR code, which you, if you have a device on you, you can scan the QR code, and that sort of brings up the website for the Wisconsin 4-H movement. And so it's a great way to kind of take a peek at that and look for kind of different things happening around Wisconsin 4-H. So that's kind of been the outreach initiative. In terms of just our county here in Kenosha, we've started our evening club visits. So far we've made visits to Wheatland Wheeling Workers as well as Paris Happy Workers. And so at the moment, everyone's kind of just been busy preparing for the fair, both like their entries and their exhibits, as well as all the paperwork involved with that. So I've been helping out there as I could, as I've been learning myself. And we're also happy to see that the clubs have been making progress on their own projects. For example, Paris Happy Workers has a very stunning, enormous community garden that they're working on. They just planted. So that's turning up really good. My next update is with the Fashion Explosion. So that's specifically for the sewing and clothing projects to have a chance to showcase and be recognized for all their hard work with designing and creating their garments. And then aside from that, so we were unable to offer day camps or any kind of camp programming for Kenosha 4-H members this year, just because that would be a pretty overwhelming undertaking for someone who's a little bit new to programming for 4-H. However, Calumet and Allegheny counties have extended their offer for their summer day camps for our members, and we did have some people sign up after I did a little bit of outreach and advertising for that. So some of our members have that to look forward to coming up later this summer, and I believe in August, like first week of August is when it's happening. Let's see, what else? Two more things. So I had the opportunity today to support some 4-H educators in the Eastern region in doing a volunteer and preparation training. So I kind of assisted while also learning how to kind of implement and facilitate this training, along with one other new hire within the 4-H realm of extension. And so soon she and I will have the opportunity to kind of more independently lead trainings for volunteers who still need that. So this is a training opportunity for them to learn about all things kind of risk management, safety precautions for our members, as well as just kind of like the history and the mission of 4-H, which, you know, is positive youth development and giving them hands-on opportunities for different projects and service learning and all of that.
And sorry, Alyssa, this is required for the volunteers,
yes.
Correct?
Correct?
One of their required trainings now,
they
thankfully.
Are required for volunteers along with the mandated reporter trainings, and then coming up this fall, actually, with the new 4-H year, we'll be requiring Title IX trainings as well as supporting youth mental health. And that's actually something that we're requiring of new volunteers who have started applying recently this spring. And then we're going to open it up as a mandatory training for all volunteers come the fall season. And then finally, I think I'll be right on the dot here. So we're in the process, Terry and I are working collaboratively to reinstate the 4-H calendar as kind of a streamlined means for people to have a way of keeping track of upcoming 4-H events. So both for, you know, the volunteers, the members, as well as their families. So that's all I have in terms of updates. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever known this, and maybe you explained it already. What does 4-H represent?
What does 4-H represent?
What are the 4-H's? Or what? I mean, what is that?
So the 4-H's. Okay. So first about 4-H.
Amy, you want to do it?
4-H.
Oh,
so my
head to greater thinking, my heart to greater loyalty, my hands to larger service, and my health to better living.
That's it.
I'm working
head,
on
heart,
yeah. hands, and health.
It's the 4-H's.
Committed to community, ultimately. So.
Yeah, and it's the nation's. Right now, it's the nation's largest positive youth development organization. So we take a lot of pride in that.
Cool.
Good question.
Questions. Like, why is the sky blue?
No, that's good.
I mean,
no, it's not obvious until you're kind of in it and you're learning it. And you know, at every club meeting that happens around the county, usually they start out every meeting with the pledge, and so that's a good way to learn what it stands for too, is to actually say the pledge.
Head, heart, hands, and
health.
Okay.
It's on their website.
It's on their website.
And Mary,
well,
you have.
I'm surprised it didn't have video.
Yeah.
Is it okay. Mary's going to pass.
Oh,
okay.
He's the frog man.
Okay, is there a director update?
There are.
Or show? Okay.
Yeah. Yep, if you're ready for that.
We're ready.
All righty. So our ag position is with the Ag Institute Director. She's on vacation for the rest of this week. But,
it's coming.
Yep. Oh.
Yikes. That'll be a treat out somewhere else.
We do have all of the,
should it be open?
Are we getting storms?
No,
yeah.
You can continue. It's not bad. It's just windy. Yeah.
Okay. So,
it should more. I think he said it very windy.
Too much air conditioning.
Right. So yeah, there are storms on the way. So historically, we've often had one of our committee members be a part of our search and screen committee, and I've asked to open that up again. So if anyone has interest in that, it's probably about a 10 to 12 hour commitment over the course of varies 4 weeks or so, depending on how many people's schedules we have to coalesce. But if you have interest, please reach out and let me know. We'll be posting that, usually post for 30 days. Then we do preliminary and final interviews with our committee. So we'll be seeing that soon for the ag position. We did the new supervisor orientation. I think that went relatively well. For my first year at it, we also enlisted the help of the local government education program, Daniel Foth. I'm also passing around some additional resources from that program for more information. There's some links there, and you can also find that online. Thanks to those who attended and provided feedback for that new supervisor orientation. We'll be incorporating that into 2024. I filled in for Erica to teach a youth pre-career skill planning seminar for kiddos at the Southwest Kenosha Library. As Alyssa mentioned, we've been attending some 4-H club and project meetings to meet folks and hear their needs. And just let them know we're here to support them. And then one other update, we are offering now a virtual tractor safety class for areas not served by in-person offerings as part of the new kind of model for ag. There's some details on classes that I can share out for those who have interest. It's going to be in the minutes and on the website as well. So if you have questions, let me know.
and that's virtual, so kiddos can attend from around the state. And finally, Dairy Breakfast is this Saturday at Elfering Farms. If you haven't heard, and I'm pretty sure they have me in the KCC parking lot helping kiddos or helping people get on buses or herding kiddos, coloring or something. I'm on the list, but I'll be here about 6 a.m. or so Saturday. So if you all don't know, please attend.
I'm serving, so for $2, I'll give you an extra.
This is being recorded, you realize. Watch out. That's all I have.
Where.
Right.
Serve every day.
Yeah.
One last quick thing about the magnets. If you wish to keep them, that is okay. They are my last three. So we'll be getting more from the state. But if you would like to keep them, you will. But I would entrust you then with the mission of sticking them somewhere in your community that has a lot of people coming through so that they can see it, scan that QR code, and get involved. So feel free to keep it, but just use it to advertise.
I think my youngest will be interested.
Excellent. And that's your own form of advertising. I love that. Get the family involved. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, next. We can, is everybody ready to move on to the next segment here?
Yeah, it's just trimmed his beard.
Okay, let's record.
All right, let's roll.
All right, so I've got a copy of the agenda here. I'm used to calling meeting to order, roll call, stuff like that. So is that...
Mm-hmm. Still need to do that.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So it's 7:10. We are calling the land use hearing items to order, meeting to order. And roll call on that. Supervisor Caro, Basha, Franco, O'Day, Gashke are all present. Supervisor Byrd is excused, and I have not heard from Supervisor Kubicki. Did you?
He's excused, yes.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
All right. Yep. So.
And we have Youth and Governance, Kenzie,
yep.
Kuhagan.
Kenzie here, Rebecca is not.
And then April Webb, Administrative Secretary, and Andy Bueller, Director of Planning Development.
Okay. All right. According to the emails and correspondence earlier, the items 6, 7, and 8 are all going to be
tabled, correct? And just before that, I'll just do the publication. So the agenda was posted in the Kenosha News as required as Class 2 notice on June 2nd and June 7th. And then, correct, as stated, items 6, 7, and 8, we ask that they be tabled. There is additional work that needs to take place at the town. It did get tabled at the Plan Commission meeting. We're meeting with the property owner in the town tomorrow to work through those details so that the surveyor can properly put together what he needs to for the right-of-way, which is really because they have two buildings that are going to be within the right-of-way, which has never been dedicated before. And so they just wanted to figure out exactly on the shape and dimensions that they should implement to go around those buildings so they're not in the right-of-way. And so we'll work that out and anticipate then that these items will be on in July. So if we can have a motion to table all three of those, that would be great.
Motion to table 6, 7, and 8.
Second.
Casper.
Motion by Supervisor Basha, second by Supervisor Gashke. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Tabled. Moving on to item number 9. Review and possible approval of resolution request to approve the appointment of Christopher Brown to the Kenosha County Zoning Board of Adjustments.
Yeah, in regards to that, this is his first reappointment as the alternate. There is a requirement by ordinance to have two alternates. We only have one. We have not been able to find a second. And his role has been very important because he has been able to fill in those times when we needed him to fill in. Because the Board of Adjustments used to be 5 members. It's now down to 3. And you need 2 to show up at every meeting to have a quorum. And so he has filled that role very well, and we would recommend for his appointment to be approved and forwarded.
Okay. Okay. Supervisor O'Day, second?
Second.
Second. Supervisor Franco, second. Any discussion? All right. I know Chris Brown personally, so I think it's a good choice as well. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Looks like we have an alternate that's approved now, so. All right, let me get back one page here. To the, there we go. All right, review and possible approval of resolution request to approve the appointment of Robert Stoll to the Kenosha County Zoning Board of Adjustments.
And Bob is here for his reappointment, and we appreciate all the work that he has done since 2006 as a member and then as the chair, and has done a great work and attended a great number of meetings, I think only missing maybe one on average per year. And that goes back to we met twice a month, so that was 24 meetings in a year, and now we're only meeting once a month, if that, even as needed. But otherwise, he's here if anyone has any questions for him. And we would recommend from our office for him to be reappointed and to move forward.
Okay. Make a motion to approve. Okay.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Bashaw, second by Supervisor Gashke. Any discussion?
Speech, Bob?
No.
Do you remember your first meeting?
Thanks for your service, Bob.
They're all a blur now.
Yes, I remember Chairman Glomblocky gave me a word of advice, a fatherly word of advice, and that was to be sure and vote the way that you feel is the appropriate and don't feel any pressure from any of the other ones. And I've thought of that many times when not only this, but in town business as well.
Mm-hmm. Very good, good advice.
Thanks for your service, Bob.
Thank you.
As
thank you for the service.
Town chairman and member of the fire department as well. So, all right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. And let's see here. Approval of minutes. I did review the minutes. I had a few comments for April. They referred to the chairman as Gashke, so I think that was just carried over from previous years. And then that the next, it said the next meeting was June 8th, but really it's the 15th. So otherwise, everything else looked fine to me. So I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from May. Oh, now I don't know the date. From the May meeting.
May 11th.
Yeah. Perfect, thank you.
Second.
So there's motion, second for minutes. Supervisor Bashaw, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, minutes are approved. Any other citizen comments? Any citizen comments? Any other citizen comments? All right, citizen comments is closed. Any other business allowed by law? Normally you have some comments, don't you?
I do. Just an update for you for our July meeting, which will be the normal meeting in July, which is, I believe, July 14th.
13th, I think.
July 13th. So don't show up on the 14th, show up on the 13th. But with that, with these three items being tabled, we'll have 10 items on that. It'll include three items actually dealing with Kenosha County in Randall, certified survey map that's in Randall and Twin Lakes that'll be coming before the board to clean up properties from the County Trunk Highway F construction out there. So just so you know that we have that business as county business. Ray is listed as the applicant. At that meeting, he'll be retired, so I'll be filling in for him with any information that you might need for that. And that's all I have.
Okay. One thing came to mind about other business law by law. I don't know if this is, falls into this category or not, but I was just thinking about the building inspection stuff. There's draft agreements that the county is looking to be the building inspector or provide building inspection services for Randall Paris and
Brighton.
Yeah, and you know, on the county public works tour that I took yesterday, we had a conversation with Ray and a few other people on staff too, and you know, there might be some interest in other communities for that. And I thought about Twin Lakes because we have Ellis as our inspector, just like Randall does, and we're looking for a better solution. And if Ellis is looking to retire, I think it might be worthwhile to explore that option anyway. And I did have a conversation with Julie at the Village of Twin Lakes, Julie Harms, who kind of handles the building administration side of it. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to know more about it and possibly get a copy of the draft agreement and just get a better understanding for it to see if that's something that we, you know, the Village of Twin Lakes would be interested in.
Sure, yeah, we kind of understood that that could happen, and we had some discussions with Laura, and then before her with Jennifer.
Yeah.
Who both had interest, mm-hmm. but was kind of probably more willing to want to get up and running to see how it was going to work. And some other communities have kind of shown interest depending on their situation or if their building inspector is going to retire or not. So, yeah, if it ends up being a good solution for all, we're certainly open to welcome, and I can share information with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'd certainly like that. The other thing that came out of it too, and I know from, and I learned about this as well, that Alex, the County Sanitarian, used to be under the Planning and Development umbrella, but now is under the Health Department or something like mm-hmm. that. And Ray had said that there's, you know, better understanding might be, you know, his understanding, it might be better suited to be back under Planning and Development because it ties into a lot of development, especially in the town and the western towns and the western areas. But then he also said that Alex is looking to retire next year as well. So County Sanitarian is going to be an important role to fill because it's so technical and, you know, it's not just anybody that can pick that up and do that. So.
Correct. Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. And we are looking at putting a proposal, and we'd have to see if there is support to move the environmental sanitarian to back to Planning and Development, because everything that he does basically works through some aspect of our office from someone, because they're always building something, right? It's an addition or a house, or there's some land split that's coming before the board that requires an inspection or a new installment. So the relationship is very close. In fact, even though he is part of health, his office is in our office,
right?
Because we talk and work together.
And most of the business conducted is
out west.
Out here as well.
Correct.
So I thought that was interesting to learn that yesterday as well. I didn't know how many other people knew about that, but some other interesting changes coming in the future here. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other business? Not seeing any. I'll make a motion. I'll move to adjourn the meeting.
Motion to adjourn. Seconded.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Adjourn. Thank you, everybody.